This is Bendik Tatari Facebook Podcast.
Sometimes it's fun to talk to CEOs, and sometimes it's fun to talk to the people in the trenches. This is an interview from the trenches. I'm Kevin Savitz, and this is an interview episode of Antic, the Atari 8-Bit podcast, and I interviewed Kent Smith, who was a Atari customer service technical support rep for the Atari 400-800 computers from 1982 to 1984. I interviewed him on September 19, 2014 via Skype. There's a videotape that he mentions at the end of the interview. You'll probably want to watch that too after you listen to this for a look at life in some of the Atari offices around Christmas 1981. It's a video that's never been on the internet until now, as far as I know. Kent sent it to me, and I posted it to archive.org for you to watch. Enjoy this interview with Kent Smith. I'll be honest, the only thing I know about you, sir, is that you worked at Atari from about 1982 to 1984. You provided technical support for the Atari computer lines. That sounds fascinating. Tell me everything. Go.
Wow, okay. When the opportunity came, mainly because I was in high school programming an attendance system for my high school in Pleasanton, and we were using the TRS-80 systems. Mm-hmm. So at that point, my best friend and I were, you know, we were assuming this was our career, this was our life. We were just going to be programming for all the schools. Things were going great, and a company came in unbeknownst to us and sold a system to the district office, and we were gone. Just out on our out on our heads.
So you were students doing this as a side project?
Yeah,
sort of deal.
Yeah, and so we had made an agreement with the vice principal at the time that we would give them the software for free. They bought the hardware, and they would be our test school, and then we could bring in other schools and show them the system, and you know, sell from there. So none of that happened. I had not applied to any colleges. So here I am, the summer of my senior year, and I got nothing. So good friend of mine was working at Atari in customer service, and he knew I was very good with computers. So he said, hey, why don't you come down and interview? So this was in the, there was a customer service building, an entire building in Sunnyvale on Crossman. If I recall, it was 1312 Crossman. And when I joined, there were probably about 75 people in total that were part of that support organization. So you had the 800 telephone operators. They took the first line of calls, you know, how do I get my Pac-Man out of the corner, you know, and that kind of stuff. And then when the problem got to the level of the computer systems, so that was when the 400 and the 800 were, you know, first introduced, we in the tech support group got those calls, and there were about 10 of us. So each day we would get together, and the 800 agents would write up these sheets of paper, right?
So when you say 800 agents, you mean
telephone call 800, you know.
The 800 number, not
yeah,
800.
Sorry. The 1-800 call Atari agents. There was probably about 45 of them. So they would write up the problem description and the person's telephone number, contact info, etc. So each morning, the 10 of us would get in a group, and we would hand them out. And we probably had about 150 a day that we had to go through. So 10 of us, that's 15 calls a day we had to make back to people. And, you know, it would have been great if we had email back then, because you could just, you know, oh, here's your answer. Right. But we had to call everybody. And after three attempts, you would send back a letter that just said, hey, after three attempts, we tried to call you. And, you know, so there's no cell phones, there's no nothing. So people were dialing from a payphone inside their building, and you'd call up and somebody would answer it. And I'm trying to reach Joe. And let me see your hey, Joe. And, you could tell you're on some assembly line somewhere. And Joe's having a problem with his 410 tape recorder. And, you're trying to troubleshoot it. He's standing at work. And can you try this? No, I'm nowhere near it. Some of those calls got very frustrating. Certain products, it seemed like certain products were not engineered to ever work. And so those were the calls that everyone tried to avoid. And
such as?
I guess it doesn't really matter now. The 410 tape recorder was one of the worst calls you could ever make, because generally if a problem occurred, it was a person, hey, I typed for 100 hours and I saved it and now I can't get it back. Yes, sir, you're right. it's like a doctor telling the patient he has cancer and he's dead already and he doesn't even know it. So those were the tough calls. The fun calls were, people trying to do things that hadn't been done before. You were helping people, understand how to program. You were helping them how to get around issues and problems. Sometimes you had people trying to do things with special equipment add-on. There were a couple of companies that had add-on cards for the 810 floppy disk drive, and they would allow copy-protected programs to be copied.
Right, like the Happy Drive or something like that.
Yeah, Happy Drive was one of them. I don't remember the name of the other one, that literally you bought the PCB and you opened your drive up and swapped it out. There were some others that were, pre-manufactured.
And then people called you guys for support?
Yes.
On modifying their drives?
Right. And so, they're telling you they're trying to copy this program, and you're thinking, you mean the program that we sell, that we make money off of, that pays my bill, you want me to help you figure out why it's not copying? It's not supposed to copy. so you got those kind of questions. There were, what was cool about that group is there were a number of new products and concepts that were being developed, and periodically we had a chance to use them before they ever went out. And so, for example, I don't know how far this got into the public, but there was a headset that essentially monitored your forehead as input to the joystick. And so you figured out how to move the left eyebrow or the right eyebrow, the left or the right side of your forehead for, your X and your Y movement. And so we had a pair of those. That was about 84, just before everything got shut down. And I'll kind of get to that one as we get to the end.
Can you think of, before you go on, other products that you tried that maybe didn't see the light of day?
So there was that one. Remind me if the 78...
We'll just iterate on that question again and again until you run out of things.
Sure, sure, no problem. There was definitely that, and I'm pretty sure that the wireless joysticks made it. Mm-hmm. I think I had a production box of that. The 7800 game system, did that make it to the light of day?
Yes.
Yes. And because I know we had an early unit, and we had a ton of game cartridges for it. And so those were very popular. We rotated that around because, the graphics were so much better than we had been used to. Mm-hmm. Up until probably 10 years ago, I had all my Atari equipment. I had multiple pieces of everything. And that's because when we shut down, pretty much everything walked out of all the buildings. And at one point, I sold it all to somebody through eBay, because that was when eBay was pretty new, and they were collecting up Atari equipment. So they had a heyday of all sorts of unreleased versions of programs, and there were a couple of games. I don't remember them in particular that I don't think ever made it, because they were close to the end. But they were really fun to play with, and it was a shame those never made it. Let's see, other equipment. you know, system-wise, I had all the Excel equipment, but I think all those eventually made it out. There was the, let's see, there was the 800 XL, the 1200 XL. Was there more than just two XLs that got out?
There was the 600, first the 1200, and then the 600 and 800 XL.
That's right, there was the 600. It seems to me that there was a fourth XL that never made it, but I don't know that I physically had one.
There was scheduled to be a 1400 XL and a 1450 XLD that had the disk drive built in.
Yes, I did have those. Yes.
Wow.
And I think I ended up, they ended up on eBay. They were probably engineering samples, so I had at least one of them. I don't remember which one.
I'd like to get back to how you acquired these things. You said things were walking out the door.
Sure.
Was it sort of like, we don't care anymore, or was it just sort of people just did it? Or
Well, so to be totally honest, we had so much work to do, especially as we were getting towards the end, that you couldn't spend time researching and studying any of the equipment while you were at work because you were busy on the phone. So everyone had equipment at home that they were doing and using and reading up on at night. So everyone's house was full of all sorts of equipment. And, you know, we did a lot of work at home too. So nobody had any problem with that. And it was all sanctioned at the time. Mm-hmm. And then, essentially, I think it was within a few day period, literally, 80% of the workforce was laid off. And so nobody was around to collect anything back. I mean, it was just, bye, here's your check, see you later, good luck. And that was good old Jack Tramiel.
Right. Yeah. So he bought it and just let most you guys go, and that was it.
Yeah. So whatever you had, had at home was yours.
Lovely parting gift.
And I remember in particular, we were all thinking, oh, great, now what do we do? Let's see, I think it was the 835 modem, the Direct Connect modem. Mm-hmm. There were control codes that were never released, so all the essentially all the control codes for managing and manipulating the modem. Well, I had that list and we had never published it. So I was trying to figure out a way, how can I sell this information to, pay my bills? And we were close when we got actually concerned, hey, this is not our data to sell. we received it under NDA, technically by the company. Company still owns it. This might be criminal. So we buried it. And because I remember at the time there were an enormous number of people that were always calling for the information. And at the time we were told not to release it because Atari was going to do something special with it, or they didn't want people, writing software for the modem to control it. And it was, it wasn't as if it was an intelligent modem, but you could do things. You could have it do things. You could automate, you could have it. Holy cow, this is going back far enough. I'm starting to forget the details of some of these things, but I recall writing my own little script for kind of an auto dialing routine that you had to know the codes in order to get it to do that. Otherwise, it was only the applications that were out. But there was something special about it. I don't recall. Actually, I do not recall, because the basic dialing was pretty simple. It might have been things like it would auto redial on busy and things like that. So there were. It was there was a list of 25 instructions that I had. I mean, I had a long sheet.
To whom were you trying to sell that list?
Anybody that was previously calling, trying to get the list that Atari said, no, we're not going to release it because we want to do all this stuff with it. And so, again, I joined when I was 18. So it's not like I had a lot of experience with the law. So here I am, now 20 or 21, and I was lucky. I probably didn't do it.
Let's go back a little bit. You said a friend said you should get this job. So how did you get the job? And did you walk in and were you interviewed, or had you seen an Atari before at that point? Or
oh yeah, we had my good friend and I had been working for somebody else as well. We had been programming quite a bit, mostly in BASIC, but then we started adapting everything for the original C. I learned in the Kerningham and Ritchie, C book. I still have it somewhere around here. It's quite worn, I'm sure. It was a first edition. It's probably worth something now. We were doing some things for a company, and at the time, it was a small. I won't get into the details because some of the things that this guy was doing was not good. But we were on the computer side of his business. So this was, all emerging stuff. This is when the TI-99/4A first came out. Mm-hmm. And the TI rep was friends with this guy. And he was saying that they needed, games for it. And so he came to us and said, hey, you guys want to create some games? So first thing I did was, hey, I could do asteroids. I could do asteroids on the TI. So I actually created an entire Asteroids game for the TI. And again, at the time, at that time, I was probably still 17. I had no idea there might be an issue over copyright or, any of that great stuff. And I prided myself on, wow, I made everything on my version look identical to the Atari version. I mean, it was perfect. It was a carbon copy. We didn't get too far with the actual sale of that because, our guy kind of melted down and I think he ended up leaving the country. Wow. So we never had anything come of that. But at the time, we had all the computer equipment. I mean, he was trying to get us to create applications and programs, games, businesses, business apps, whatever it was. And so we had... one of every computer system. And so I was originally programming on the 800 when it first came out. So we had a ton of experience. And so, being tech support in those days, we were at the top of the knowledge stack beyond anybody else. Mm-hmm. So I actually got my start on a Heathkit H8 in 1978, and I do remember going to the West Coast, the second West Coast Computer Fair, and I do remember, seeing one of the original Apple systems there at the fair. Now, I'm sure Jobs was there, and I'm sure I talked to him, but I have no recollection at that time, because I think that was, 76 or 77. Because it was before we bought, I thought it was before we bought the Heathkit and built that. So I was all, self-educated on programming. And, by today's standards, it's, a total hack job of the things that we knew and we learned. But it got the job done.
Sure. Any other weird calls come to mind? Any weird technical support you had to do?
Okay. The funniest thing that we joke about, even now when we some of us are still LinkedIn and talking to each other, some of the funniest conversations we had were actually the names of some of the people. You could say all these people made up these names, but we actually called them and talked to them, and we had to prevent busting up when we said their names. So I'm not sure if you want me to say the names. You're recording
sure.
It. Do you care?
I can always edit it out.
One guy's name was Harry Tits. Now, at the time, I remember thinking there is no way anybody could have a name like that. And somebody called him and said, if he's faking it, he did very well. And I don't know if he thought that would get him more attention and get a call faster or what, but he seemed to think that was his name. That one stood out for all these years. There was a couple of others I don't remember offhand, but it was that same combination of what was this person's parents thinking,
right?
Or the person changed their first name to match to make a better last name. I don't know. They wanted attention, and maybe this is before you could do piercings through your eyebrow, and that's how they got their attention. call wise, the calls. The calls were piling up. The calls were getting more and more difficult to stay on top of. You spent so much time just trying to reach somebody, and the number of actual good connections were oftentimes very difficult to achieve in a day. And so you ended up with this mass of, they were green. They were form, we had them custom printed on tablets, stacks of 100 of these that the 800 agents would keep on their desk. And they were stacking up on our desk, and fortunately they were all dated. So after 3 weeks, even if you didn't get to your three calls, you would, have a form letter sent. And there was probably about 21 different form letters. We had a guide, indicating all sorts of different predefined texts that there was a group of three ladies were running an IBM, an ancient IBM word processor, way before the PC. Actually, just before the PC, because it actually hit 81, right? IBM PC 1981. That sounds about right. So this was, the PC wasn't very deep. It wasn't used in business very much. So they had some, big, massive word processors that they had predefined these form letters on. And so our favorite form letter was the H15. So the H15 was simply, we've tried multiple times to reach you. We've tried at the contact information you've provided. If you're still having your problem, give us a call, and we'd be happy to help you out. So sometimes you would, and all you had to do was take that form and you just wrote H15 on it, and then you put it in your outbox and it would go over to the word processing team. So sometimes you were just so flustered with your day, you'd just go through your stack and you'd just H15, 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 and every once in a while you got caught. It's like, you haven't even called this person, you're sending an H15. Yeah, well, shoot, it's been 2 weeks. I haven't even tried, I feel bad for the guy. I want him to know, call us back if you're still having the problem, because maybe they don't. And right. It was frustrating too, because sometimes the problem sounded cool and you wanted to work on it, and you tried six times to get hold of them. Finally, you get a hold of them. Oh yeah, I figured it out. I didn't have the monitor plugged in. Oh my God. And okay, so that brings up a whole progression of tech support. This was the beginning of my tech support career. I did three other companies before I moved over into product management. The most difficult part of tech support, I don't know if you've ever done it yourself, is, but by the way, if you're in computers, I'm sure you've done it for your family and don't even realize it.
That's
so,
true. Yeah.
You always
realize it.
You always get the call that says, hey, my computer's not working. Really? Can you give me a little more information? What is it not doing? Well, it's not connecting. Not connecting to what? It's not connecting to the network. Okay, what do you see on your screen? Well, nothing. Okay, is it on? Is what on? Well, is the monitor on? How can I tell? There's usually something on the screen. Yeah, there's nothing on the screen. Okay, check the power cord. Oh, shoot. Looks like the dog unplugged it. Okay, great. So then you got used to that and you started treating everybody like an idiot.
Right.
So everybody's an idiot. You start at the beginning. Is the TV monitor plugged in? And now when I buy a TV and I look at the troubleshooting page, I always find it fascinating to see the first step, is it plugged in? You know what? they probably went through the same stuff I do. These people are still alive. They still don't know how to plug in their TV.
Which is why, like, when I call my cable company because my internet went out or something, I'm just like, yeah, you know, the router needs to be rebooted or whatever. And they treat you like an idiot. Just like, is it plugged in? Is your computer on? Just like, I know what I'm doing. Just just reset my router.
Exactly. And so we would run into, you know, so when, you know, somebody like you would have the unfortunate presence to call in to try to get help, and we treated them like a moron. You know, it was always kind of difficult to recover from that kind of thing. Yeah. But those were good days.
So after you were laid off, what happened?
The Atari gig lasted almost 2 years directly. It was through one of the 800 agents that I met my wife, my wife-to-be, and ended up marrying her shortly after that, and still my wife. So we've been married forever.
So you owe your marriage to Atari.
I do.
Excellent.
So the career after that, right after that, I think my career went to BizComp, which was that was actually the inventor of the intelligent modem. The beginnings of Hayes microcomputers, and you know, everybody remembers the Hayes modem. The Hayes modem actually had its start from a BizComp modem. And there was a lawsuit before I joined them. So BizComp had been making these modems, and they actually created the plus, if you remember that. And Hayes bought one of those modems and copied it. Exactly. Does exactly the same thing. So BizComp sued them and ended up winning. It was publicly like a $2 million settlement. So he started, that was Michael Eaton. He started the full-on company and hired a bunch of people and started selling modems. So I went in there to do tech support. Very small operation. Didn't have the momentum that Hayes had. And, you know, nobody's ever heard of BizComp, even though they created it and hold the patent on it. So Hayes bought the rights to essentially continue selling under his patent. And at the time, I thought, wow, he made a great deal. When I then went to my next company, which was a subsidiary of Quantum, known as Plus Development, they were the inventors of the hard card. And so the director of marketing at the time was my boss, and I was telling her, she knew I had, you know, she hired me from BizComp. So she knew that story, and she told me a story from the other side of the fence. She was actually the person that negotiated the deal with my prior boss. And what he didn't know is that she had been granted the ability to write a check for nearly 50 times the number he asked for. So he was all happy. He got his $2 million, and she was, she was the queen of the store when she came back with, 1/50th, 2% of what they expected to spend. Right. So they were quite happy. From there, it was actually in Plus Development that I moved over from tech support into product management. And so remember, you know, at this point, I'm still flying with a high school diploma. And I was good at what I did, but I could see that there was a glass ceiling. So I started taking courses at a local community college, just learning about finance because I knew nothing, learning about management because I now had a team that I was taking care of, and eventually realized that, you know, a degree might be useful in something. So continued on all through night school. So I went from zero to an MBA. All at night. So kept my career going, and now have gone through a number of senior director roles at various companies, and most recently part of SandForce, the solid state drive controller manufacturer. And so now Most recently, we've been acquired by Seagate. So gone through a lot of computer companies over the years. And, you know, so Atari gave me my start, my career, everything started there. Lots of good, fun stuff. And, you know, I don't know if this is interesting to you. I found a videotape that we made in the customer service department of, it was about, it must have been about 1981, Christmas of 81, we made a video. We had a video recorder, and we made a video of, it was almost a bunch of skits and stuff, and I'm pretty sure I have it transferred over to DVD.
I must have that, sir.
I figured it might be something that would be interesting. Now, I have to tell you that some of the video quality is not the greatest. The scanner at the time, you know, hell, I'm amazed I got it from the cartridge over to digital before the thing totally imploded. So there's some parts of it that didn't come through great, but you can still tell everything going on and the crazy stuff we did. And
sounds hilarious. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, and that was all. That was actually done right. Oh, it was done in 81 because it was right before I got there. All the people that are in it, I worked with, and we had a great time.
All right, so is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have, that anything you want to talk about? That
I don't think so. Have you gotten a hold of Chris Crawford?
I've talked to Chris Crawford.
Okay.
He did a great interview.
Great.
I'll send you the link to that if you want to hear it.
Great. Yeah, in fact, I would, because I didn't get to spend time with him when he was there. But he was, he was obviously an icon for all the rest of us. And I think he's on my LinkedIn now. I have run into him quite recently.
All right, I think my last question is this. If you could send a message to the Atari 8-bit using community, and you can right now, what would you tell them?
Atari started my career, my life, and everything I have now. So it was a great move from high school. I cherish my time there. It was my first professional job, and it was some of the greatest times of my life working for an incredible company. And it was so horrifically sad to see it all go down so quickly from one pissed off guy. That's what I'll leave the group with.
Great. Thank you so much for your time, Kent.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
All right.